Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was heads or tails.
Lemon face.
All right. King Diamond fucking sucks,
you
dude.
You fucking
yes,
suck.
Yes, they do.
I'll say it.
You better not fucking say it.
No, King Diamond sucks.
You know what King Diamond
don't
is, Matt?
Don't make me fuck you in your own house.
Trash.
You're trash.
She's like, but they're satanic, dude.
Oh, they wear makeup, dude.
Don't make me fuck you in your house. You remember how, like, Nyx had his followers? Like, they're, like, waiting for him to come back? The guy in Lord of Illusions. And then he kills him because he's like, you guys suck. That's what Satan's going to do to King Diamond.
I don't think so.
King Diamond and Ghost.
It's like, your shit sucks, dick.
Ghost sucks.
Done.
Ghost hella sucks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Ghost Podcast, episode 367. This is Jorge.
Buenos ding dong diddly DS. Let's fucking listen to K-pop. This is Maddie Ding Dong.
This is Ree.
Oh, just a simple in and out, huh?
I took him by surprise. That's why. The look on his face, he was like,
he didn't have his shit pulled up.
Yeah, he didn't have a monologue.
I didn't have one today. You can't do it every time.
You can't, because then the people expect it every time, and they get bored.
And fuck the people, am I right?
I mean, but if you find good monologues, if you just scour Steven
Seagal
movies.
I'd like to fuck
movies,
some people.
Yeah.
See?
You know who I'd like to fuck? All of the people over at patreon.com/whogoestherepodcast, because they're caring individuals. And you know what? That's fucking sexy. So all of you over at patreon.com/whogoestherepodcast, I want to make sweet love to you for opening up your wallets and sharing with us and helping us continue doing this fine show you're enjoying, day this is.
Give us the dick.
Yeah.
Or give us whatever.
Give us the give dollars. Us
whatever genitalia you want to
give us the dollaries, we'll give you the dude.
Nice, nice, yes. Nice. Well, gentlemen,
what a metaphor you made right there.
Anything significant you want to address before we get to the movie?
No, I am enjoying doing wrestling very much. Check out Fist Combat on all social media. We just had a really big show over the weekend.
A really big shoe.
May have seen it with Flaming Elbow jumping off of a pier. Pretty dope. That's about it.
Dupe. Where are you going tomorrow?
I'll be going to Colorado tomorrow for the Telluride Horror Show, which is fucking super fun. Get to see some of the fine folks at Patreon. Gonna give them a good fucking. Hans Coop, they're gonna take that D. So is Alan. Gonna be very excited to see you guys. Give you some sweet, sweet loving. Gonna see some cool movies. I'm excited for.
Maybe. He's all about normalizing heterosexual butt fucking tonight.
Yep. I'm excited for Butt Fucking Mad Heidi. That movie looks insane. Also, there's a film called The Breach that looks really cool. And then there was one other one that I was really excited for. There's a new Joe Bigos movie starring Jeremy Gardner. It's a Christmas movie. There's another favorite Christmas movie with David Harbour coming out. So, yeah.
He's like a fun-loving Santa, though, who kills people.
Yeah. I mean, as you should. You know, kind of like Bill
haven't
Goldberg.
Haven't we done this enough?
What, Santa killing people?
Never.
Santa slay. And then
any opportunity we have to crush the dreams of children, I'm for.
Dude. No, but this is anti-crushing dreams.
Oh, well then.
Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 killed the fucking game. For life. Yeah. Not just Santa movies. Like, for all art.
I was thinking about that as I was looking for parking outside of your house. I was like, God damn it, it's garbage day! Yeah.
I wonder, can we do it again?
What did
you
see?
Can we review it every year?
Maybe.
I wanted to talk about omitted from the Patreon. I went to the theater and saw Terrifier 2. I know we're doing an episode.
Mm-hmm.
But the theatrical experience of seeing this 2.5-hour film was interesting. And hi, Sophia.
Hi, Sophia.
And it was an interesting thing, so I got to see that.
Did anybody vomit or pass out?
No, however, I did overhear some employees saying, truthfully, not just the bullshit rumors and stuff, some employees there were saying a lady walked out earlier.
Oh, I can imagine a lot of people would walk out, yeah.
Yeah, and when people said passed out, I mean, it's just as likely they fell asleep.
Fair.
Because...
got them.
I mean, just because you found them asleep doesn't mean they fainted. They might have just gone to night-night because it's 2.5 hours.
In that case, I passed out watching Smile.
Hey, hey, don't talk like that, man.
I did. I definitely did.
Oh, and then Sophia and I went and saw Meshuggah in L.A. over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And
as indicated by your T-shirt.
It was, of course. And yours says...
Mother, my other ride is a mustache.
Oh, I thought it said mother's ride my mustache.
I mean, that's true as well.
Is it already?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a certified motherfucker.
Okay, okay. All right.
But
all right.
This band, it was something else, man. It was fucking, I mean, I had so much fun. It was.
You were the guy going like, guys, can you believe it?
Yeah. Isn't this a great show?
All of us were so happy. And I don't know who these fucking idiots are. But we were so happy where they were talking about extinction and the cosmos and death and
the cosmos.
We were so happy about it. And it was like fucking battle sequences from Lord of the Rings, like, but super R-rated in space. That was like the Meshuggah show.
Dope.
I loved it.
All right.
Let's see if you have those same feelings for Hellraiser.
Well, wait, before that, I forgot to tell you guys. I'm going back to LA on Saturday to this museum gala at the Academy of Motion Picture Sciences. And because a guy through work hooked up this opportunity where you meet the celebrities, you're helping them out of their limousines and you get paid for it.
So, that's dope.
Yeah. And they're honoring Tilda Swinton. And freaking Steve McQueen, the director of 12 Years a Slave. And Halle Berry and Jason Blum are hosting it. And Lupita Nyong'o.
Hmm.
So Jason Blum's there. And
tell him his movies suck.
Well, actually,
help him out of his limo and be like, fucking Halloween is terrible and you should feel terrible.
Yeah, I'm sure I won't get to talk to anybody, but it'll be cool. It sounds like a fun experience. I was kind of nervous about it because I'm like, it's new and I'm like, no, don't do it. And it's like, fuck that. Go try it out, right? And we carpool up there, so it doesn't cost anything to get up there. But I do want to ask Halle Berry if given the opportunity about Moonfall. I want to be like, what the fuck? What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
Just a little impromptu interview on the red carpet.
Just don't even say anything. Just say, what's going on?
What do you
and
mean?
And she's going to ask you, like,
what
the fuck? I mean,
what's wrong with you?
Remember Monster's Ball? You know? This. I mean, you've had shit before, like Die Another Day, but
remember Catwoman, dude?
Woo.
Remember Gothica? And she was in that video with Fred Durst?
Damn.
Yeah.
But, callback.
I'm excited to, you know, Tilda Swinton's dope. Steve McQueen is dope. Oh, and Mikey Lee, who is a producer who works with Bong Joon-ho, is the other honoree.
Hell yeah. Sounds dope.
Sounds pretty fucking cool.
You have to sneak your boy in to open up my limo door. Hell yeah.
I mean, you could go do the job and open up
other stores. Bro, I'm too big for that.
You could open up the Lament configuration.
I'm too big for that. I'll be opening up the Lament configuration. Selecting pleasure.
I'm too big for that. Listen to this
too
guy.
Too big for that, bro. Talk to my agent.
Talk to my agent, me.
I'll be at my own premiere, having my own.
When is your premiere?
My premiere is the 22nd. Yeah, keep an eye out for Appetite for Sin. The first movie I ever shot is having its premiere in LA on October 22nd.
There you go. Mention these things in your life.
Dunce Cat Boy is out and about. Choice Cuts is out and about and actually won Best Gore Short at the Los Angeles Horror Film Festival.
Best gore short.
Yep. That's dope.
Gore short.
Me, baby. Me. I'm the
baby.
One.
Baby.
I'm the one. Let's talk about the gore in Hellraiser. 2022's
Hellraiser. Directed by David Bruckner. Written by Ben Collins, Luke Poitrowski, and David S. Goyer. Starring Odessa Zion, Jamie Clayton, Adam Faison, Drew Starkey, Brandon Flynn, Ioif.
Is that the name?
Ioif. Hans. Jason Lills.
Hans!
Yinka Olorunife.
I'll yank your
Selena Lowe. Zachary Hing. Kit Clark. Goran Vizhnik. Chaim Abbas. And then a bunch of other people.
Did you say I am a boss?
A bunch Chaim, of L'chaim.
Disposable people.
Yep.
How are you gonna do this, Jorge?
I don't know, dude.
Don't do me first. I can't. Or wait.
You want to go first? I'll go first.
I'll go first. I mean,
I have been on a bit of a like, wasn't so bad kick lately. And that's literally what I have to say about Hellraiser.
100%.
Wasn't so bad.
That's so sad.
The story is nonsensical bullshit. Yep.
What?
I enjoy some of the themes of mental health issues and struggling with past and addiction and all that stuff. The creature effects, pretty fucking good. I enjoy the leatherless Cenobites. Kind of into that.
It makes more sense, right? Like, if it's not being fantastical that way.
Why? They're like,
because they wouldn't buy leather.
I mean, they just own it. They wouldn't buy anything.
Right, so they're going to use skin.
The fact that this
still look like red leather.
The fact that this movie had a real 13 Ghosts vibe to me. I'm like,
hella did.
Dude, 13 Ghosts had a Hellraiser vibe.
He was literally like, I built a trap, and I'm like, you mean like 13 Ghosts?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean specifically, I mean the house. Sure. Like when the house is like, it's got a cage around it. I'm like, oh, 13 Ghosts, dude.
Where's all these switches, dude? Like the ceiling opens up to do the thing.
You know, 13 Ghosts the original movie was in like the fucking 60s,
but,
right?
But we're not saying yeah, that
fuck you, man.
Fuck you!
The original Hellraiser didn't have.
Go again.
No, the original Hellraiser didn't have this fucking trap house, which is funny to say.
Trap house.
It didn't have this trap house.
That's the most obvious thing, dude.
But so
any house that has a trap for demons now,
as George said, this is a 13 Ghost ripoff.
All right, go back. Sorry,
maybe it's a sequel. Maybe it's a 13 Ghost sequel. Yeah, yeah, that's what it is.
13 demons. It's the more subdued 13 Ghosts.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the varied Cenobites, like the different versions of them. I enjoyed the
like the Weezer and the
who are you?
One of them was called the Weezer. One of them was called the Psy or some shit.
The
Mask.
The Gasper.
The idea behind the lament configuration is kind of hilarious to me because it's like you got to wait for the little hook to come out and get you. It's got to get you.
Put your finger in the hole.
Put your finger in the hole. But otherwise, I gotta say, I had a decently fun time. Did not hate it. I'm coming off a smile and being like, all right, well.
Could be worse.
Could be worse. And I had a decent time with it, I gotta say.
Okay. First, David Bruckner did 7.
No.
What did he do?
God, please, Matt.
What did he do? I know the name.
Before you get there.
I'm bad with names.
No, I know. Before you do that, let me clean that up. David Fincher did 7.
Okay, what did Bruckner do?
No, but Fincher also did Zodiac. See if you like these movies real quick. Zodiac.
I haven't seen Zodiac.
So
that's a mistake. Fight Club.
So David Bruckner did The Night House, The Ritual, and a segment in Southbound. All of Southbound, I forget.
A segment in VHS.
Okay. Yeah. So you're like 50-50 on him.
Okay. So the reason I ask is because stylistically, I really enjoyed how it looked. Like, I mean, whatever filter they used or color correction or whatever, like stylistically, I'm really in favor of the look of the movie as a whole.
You're a whole.
I did not care about any of the characters. I felt like everybody was introduced really quickly and you didn't get a chance to really get to know anybody. And then with a movie that lives and dies on the appearance of the Cenobites, it takes a really long time to actually get to that. I felt the Cenobites were kind of...
Not as long as the burning took to get to its second kill, though.
A little boring as a whole. The outfits are definitely different. The gore effects are cool, as you would expect from Hellraiser. And I did like that they expanded on the box a little bit. Because I haven't seen, I don't know, Hellraiser like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 or whatever. Like there's a big chunk where they got really bad. So they may have explained the box a little more. But I like that they went into detail about what the box does. Because
the different options.
Well, yeah, because you're always kind of like, okay, people just are seeking pleasure, and then they play with the box, and then they get fucking torn to shreds. Like, that's it. That's, yeah, that's basically the...
He chose knowledge, clearly.
The thing of the box, you know? So them introducing that, it makes certain things make a little more sense, like the doctor in Hellraiser 2, yeah. You know? And, like, the whole thing of Hellworld and... knowing that, like, there's sacrifices and then you have the option to choose what your own reward is. I like that. So I like the expansion of the lore. But overall, like, I kind of just wanted the main character to fucking die. And, like, I didn't care enough about bringing her brother back because her brother was in it for 5 minutes.
Well, and not only that, I think, like, it sort of belies this idea that you can come back from...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, well, come
on. And then in addition... Well,
the first one did that.
In addition, this is something that I've said about...
Built into the lore, fucks!
I said this about fucking Dash Cam, and I've said it about a couple movies recently. Even Barbarian with Joseph Long. Like
Justin Long.
Justin Long. Where if your protagonist isn't likable... It's really hard to get invested in the movie.
Like the Friday the 13th movies that you love.
Well, there's usually a protagonist that's at least likable.
I'm just going to say it every week.
Or that you could root for them, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, you can root for
them. And as we talked about in fucking Lord of Illusion, cock, you know, there's a difference. There's a difference between a good movie and an enjoyable movie. Do I enjoy Friday the 13th? Yes. Do I think that there's anything good about Friday the 13th aside from the amount of tits and the original kills? Sometimes, like Corey Feldman, you care about little Corey Feldman.
Oh, like, so you like part four, huh? So that's the good one.
That's I'm trying to meet you on your level because you subpar taste, so I'm trying to start with the one that you understand.
Yeah, right. You Jesus know? Christ.
Like, you know, you care about the fat little goofy kid in part five that gets Crom hacked up with the,
four wins
with
right
the
now,
axe,
dude.
You know? So, like, this is my long-winded way of saying that, you know, it's very okay. It's not bad. It's one of the better... remake reboots that we've seen in
I'm gonna go out on a limb, one of the best fucking Hellraiser films by
it's a low bar
it's as easy third place and yeah. Depending on what your tastes are, probably second place. I don't know.
Yeah, it goes 3-2 Hellraiser 2022.
But so I was very hopeful about the movie because of David Bruckner. And because I think the Hellraiser stuff, the world that it has and the potential for world building and lore, I think is one of the best in all of horror. I'm saying the potential. It has some really cool fucking ideas, really cool design elements. I like the whole idea of it, the lament configuration. I think I'll agree with you guys, particularly with Matt. It fleshed out certain specifics about the world better, more than it was in the first two movies, more than I had seen. And I think that's, for the most part, a good thing, because it makes a little more sense now.
And it didn't ever feel hokey.
No, it didn't feel, well, I'll kind of get there with that. It didn't feel hokey for the most part to me. My point of departure is this, like, and I'll agree with Matt, like, the characters were generally uninteresting to me, and it kind of, like, again, the characters, even in the first Hellraiser, like, you got Kirstie and you got Frank... And you got the situation with the lady. But even those characters were more interesting than these. And I feel like this, as someone in recovery and in the recovery field, perhaps that tainted it a little bit. But the main character, Riley, she's an addict. And it's like they introduced that. And it's like, okay, so what? And it's like, well, she's going to go to a park in the middle of the night and her brother's going to be worried about her. So it becomes a plot mechanism more than anything. And it's like, I see how... loosely it ties in thematically because of addiction and all that, but I don't think they really do much with it.
It becomes more tertiary to her character than if anything.
Kind of, yeah. I mean,
I think all it is it's just a means to an end to show that ultimately she's responsible for everything that happens.
Well, and I think, and it comes at the end in that conversation, which I think is overwrought, by the way, but I guess we'll get there. But here's the thing. Hellraiser is a thing that's, a lot of horror is, but Hellraiser in particular is really dependent upon production design to me. And so they had, the Cenobites had to feel like Cenobites and look like Cenobites.
Yeah.
And I think they did a pretty good job. However, I will say this. It didn't feel like the tactile thing of it. The suits, I like that they use skin. Again, that makes more sense to me, but I miss like the kinkiness of the leather.
Was it all skin? Because yeah. Like, okay, because I thought they were just wearing red leather.
It was like, tulle, dude. It's like,
and I mean, they had that one that was all black that looked like it had been burned. It was like, that one was the Gasper, I think.
The Chatterbox one.
There was the, I kind of take issue having the Chatterbox one in there just because like, so they
needed to be a chunky boy.
Well, so they're reusing Pinhead and it's like, okay, I get it. Pinhead is iconic in the Hellraiser franchise. So you do a female Pinhead. That's fine. But to bring in
I guess the idea it's supposed to be more androgynous. Yeah. More androgynous. Yeah.
So, and I'm fine with that, but I think like,
oh, well good.
So to me, it seemed like, this movie implies that there may be multiple lament configurations and maybe there's certain Cenobites that are tied to each box. I know what I mean?
I don't know, but let me finish my shit.
Were you talking about Chatter? And so I was talking about like bringing in the Chatterbox character.
I like the fucking design of the Cenobites for the most part, but I think it's very clear in this. They're wearing suits. It looks like they're wearing suits. It doesn't really look like skin, like, and it's like, well, maybe I'm nitpicking. No, I'm not. Like in Hellraiser 1, like the parts that look like flesh look fleshy. When you see blood, it looks like blood. Like there's a real like visceral tactile element, and this looks like when it shows like layers of skin, like on the shoulders and like the collarbone.
They look like Frieza.
It looks like you're wearing a bodysuit, and. It's like, well, big deal. It is a big deal. It takes me out of Hellraiser. Like, it needs to feel fucking gross.
Yeah.
I think they did a pretty good job with the gore. Pretty good. I think they did some good tactile stuff, like when they fucking... I keep using that because it's important to Hellraiser to me. Like, you know, when you get to the Leviathan, it's like, yeah, use CGI. That makes sense to use CGI Leviathan. Like, duh. But, like, when they're putting the needles and stuff in the chick's neck...
Yeah.
I thought that shit was kind of cool. Yeah. I thought that was a good move. But
I don't understand what the point of that was unless it was just like a clever way of inflicting pain.
Well, I think it's the point of it is to try to show, I think it's to bring that element into the movie because I think the director and the writers were being very conscientious about what needs to be in a Hellraiser movie. Like you need some of this kind of gore.
Because the
very
the,
specific
the,
gore.
The concession of the Hellraiser lore is that like ultimately no matter what pleasure you're picking, it's eventually going to lead to pain because that's sort of like the ultimate sensation that the body can feel, right? Like there's no, you can't feel over pleasure. Like it eventually will lead to like, well, you got to now cut off your dick.
Well, and when you hear about like being present in the moment, nothing brings you into the here and now more than pain.
Yeah.
That's the one. You are nowhere else when you're in pain.
Yeah, you can't like completely numb it out if it gets to a certain extreme.
Yeah, the most immediate, strongest threshold and frontier there is. So that's like really cool and unsettling if you know, from a certain perspective. And it's like, that's true. That's just true about being a fucking creature. That's true in general. But see, what I think this film is missing, and I watched it twice actually, one by myself and one once with Sophia, is it's missing the sense of transgression. It's missing the kinkiness. And by transgression, I mean, like, there's some great bits in Hellraiser where it's just blasphemy.
Yeah.
Like and the Christ thing popping out of the closet, and, like, Jesus wept. And it's like, you need that sense of actual blasphemy because it takes, like, the profane and the sacred, and it, like, obliterates both of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, now we're, like, at a fucking frontier.
I guess, I don't know.
I had sex because you have to have sex, but it's like, this is not like...
I guess I kind of disagree a little bit because I mean, I always like when occult movies don't...
Hit you over the head with it?
Well, not that, but don't deal with, like, Christianity because I think if it's going to be a world where that exists, I think Christianity is so droll and so, like, it is so terrestrial that, like... Yeah, if
this is more the world building thing, you're right.
If Pinhead was like, and fuck Jesus, I'd be like, really?
Yeah, but not it doesn't need to be like that direct.
I just like, you know,
the doesn't need to be like part three where he's like a jokester in the church.
I like the elimination of Christianity from the lore altogether. I like that stuff.
Because it's more interdimensional.
It's pure cosmic horror without the need for terrestrial religion, which when it's unnecessary, I think kills momentum.
And you can see that, well, you know what, from that vantage point, it backs up other stuff, man. Like, these are very conscious decisions to really, like, explaining the lore more, leaving the Christian bits out, the theological bits out. I mean, these are very deliberate moves. I think that they lend it better to world building. I'll say that.
To Matt's point, like, I really do like the idea of, other than, like, the, I gotta poke you with my sharp bit, the leveling up, so to speak, of it. And it's the whole thing is called a lament configuration, or is it just...
I always thought it was, but now I'm under the impression that like only the first part of it is called the lament. Because one of the last lines of the movie is, you chose the lament configuration.
But it's, you chose to carry the box. You chose to carry the weight of the box.
Well, right, but like, so... But what they're saying
it's
is
just one configuration
what,
among.
Yeah, many. What she's saying is you chose life, you know. So you and when you're looking down the list of things, the very first,
which is the cube, dude.
The cube, the very first one, it says lament life, and it's like regret life. So when she says you chose the lament configuration, it's like, oh, okay, well, she chose, this is her reward. So like, would you call it the Leviathan configuration if you just found it sitting on the floor like that?
Like it's a diamond. You're like, wow, cool, yeah, dude.
Oh, look, a Leviathan configuration.
the other thing is this: the first half. I think this movie is significantly better for the most part once it hits the second half. Once it gets where it's going. Oh, what I really, when you guys say the story is nonsensical, I really like the plot mechanism of this guy who's in the occult and this really corrupt dude who is getting other fucking victims to come open pieces of this until it gets to the part he wants.
Right.
I think that's fucking great, and it shows where he is, and it also, he chooses sensation. I think the best design feature and maybe idea in the entire film, and it feels the most Hellraiser-ish,
that clockwork's in his chest.
That shit in that's his cool. chest. And I was like, what is this? And then like, he explains it in a way that sounds natural. It's not just like an expo dump.
Yeah.
And even if it was, it's a horror movie. I'm not expecting it to feel like fucking that organic. But it does. It feels pretty organic. Well,
see, and I think that was another thing is like, you see somebody transform in almost every Hellraiser movie. And it's always like something that has to do with them.
Yeah.
So like with that, I thought we were going to maybe see that with the girl getting the needle through her throat, you know. But like seeing that thing, it's like, wow, that's fucking cool. And that makes sense as to why he has that. So,
and they're shredding his fucking nerves. Like, that's great. That's
and he's
great.
Like, they always like stop at just the right point to where I don't like end it all.
Yeah.
You know, he's sitting there trying to like snip his nerves. Well,
it reminded me of like, you know, because you work out, brother, you got to trick the muscle.
Yeah.
They trick his nerves. Instead of going just numb, like they keep pulling random ones. So he can't like,
and then
his
stop.
Body never adjusts.
Yeah, that's kind of dope.
That shit was fucking...
I like that little setup. And then even the CGI bit where like that thing falls out of his chest and his chest mends back together.
That was
like,
fucking cool.
Dude, and then...
Because it had all the pieces falling out, and then it had that hole in him that was like really the shape of it.
Yep.
I mean, that was very...
And then his heart like reformed and everything. Mm-hmm, and then like... So I guess we did get to see somebody transform because we got to see him transform at the end.
Well, and then that's the thing. That last shot, it bugged me the first time. Because I got where they were going for. He's like going to be with Leviathan now. Like you're going to be, you want power.
He is a god. That's right. What I got from
it. Well, and that's where it becomes that kind of transgressive thing. I don't mean with Christianity, but it's showing earlier on when she's sticking the pins in the lady's neck, she starts doing the prayer and she's like, what is it you pray for? And then she says salvation. And she's like, basically, I'm paraphrasing, you want to be somewhere where nothing ever happens.
Yeah, she's like, what would that feel like to you?
Yeah, and she's like, there's no music in that. Like, you know, but this, like, there's, you know. And then at the end where that dude ends up with fucking Leviathan and basically gets turned into a Cenobite, kind of like the fucking dude in Hellraiser 2, but instead of choosing presumably knowledge, he chooses power. He's just sitting there in this blinding fucking power, and it's like, okay, now you got... It's kind of very... It's like the same analogy as wanting heaven. Like, okay, you're here now. Now what?
Well, see, what can he do with that, though? Because
that's what I mean.
They had said... woman had made the comment as he was transforming, and it said, our power lies in... Was it dominance? It was something like that.
The something like the glory of our is in yeah, is in dominance.
Yeah, our power lies in dominance or something. And it's like, okay, cool. Like
there's some good lines.
And like so I dig his whole arc, man, because like this guy had gone through and he had done the lament configuration. I'm just gonna call it that.
Yeah.
He had done the lament configuration the entire cycle through. He had his conference with God, he chose pleasure, and like you would think under normal circumstances, like that's cool, end of story for that dude. But he's still around. So I'm guessing he's like immortal now in the term, like the way the Cenobites are. But also now the okay, see, this is a big fucking gripe I have with movies lately is you get these like, these terms may not be exactly correct, but these ancient immortal beings that have been around for fucking eons that have been doing their thing. And then suddenly you just get this random chick off the street, this random drug addict chick that's just like, I understand how to say or how to deal with these things. And you can just stab them with the box. The box is like now a little knife. You just fucking stab them in the middle of the gate. That I
agree with. It's too simple.
It's like, no. Because that would have been done fucking years ago. And then there would never have been a Cenobite problem.
It's a little trite, but I always...
It's also a little trite that the Chatterer just straight up bites a dude.
Yeah.
Why? Which I mean, I'm okay with it, I guess. But it's like, what, you know, that kind of brings them down a notch.
It seems a little too
fucking cute.
Could
you just like slap him in the face?
The thing that always kind of bugs me about the Hellraiser films and specifically dealing with the lament configuration is, and I understand that like maybe they're being manipulated by, you know, an otherworldly power, but everybody has this innate like path to solving the puzzle. And I'm like, well, how do you get to this puzzle that seemingly has no directions? No, obviously puzzles don't have directions.
It's too easy.
I get what you mean.
Like you move it a little bit, and it's like, oh, here we go. It's
and
easy.
Then it's like click, 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 click. It's like, oh, configured.
Well, see, and with the original one, like when it's just the lament configuration, it seems like it's an easy figure. Like people it's just kind of rub easy. Their thumb around the circle and then push the button. It's like, oh shit, you could do that by accident.
But this one,
it's like, oh, you have to do all these fucking.
What I kind of the tone that I kind of got was that like. It was one of those things where it was an amount of divine intervention, for lack of a better word, where you're being influenced by whatever otherworldly power to get you there because it wants to be solved.
That one Cenobite even said that blade was for you or something to that effect. When the girl solves the puzzle and doesn't get stabbed, she's like, that blade was meant for you. So if not you, then another. And it's like, I don't know why her brother just got sacrificed. Like that scene where they mark her and they're like, if not you, then another. And they do that Silent Hill logo on her chest. And then like the chains come out of her heart and like wake her brother up. And I don't understand that.
Like, okay, I don't understand. That was great. Okay. So what that was, she's like, if not you, then another. Her mind is fixated on her brother. So that's the image that it gets from her, because this is, again, a lot of this is like, well, it's interdimensional, right? But so, and I don't want to be like in the astral realm, but that wakes up her brother. Her brother is preoccupied with her anyway. And just like, you know, when you woken up in the middle of the night worried about someone, it's suggesting there is kind of a psychic link between the two of them because they're siblings. And also because she's under the influence of a supernatural device or influence. And it's like, you know, who's going to be the one beside you? And that was the first thing. That's the first individual in her head.
Well, she was under the influence of a toxic relationship. Well, exactly. Drugs is what she was under the influence of.
Well, and also, but she's got a toxic fucking relationship with her brother because there's enablement. There's a circular dance going on of that. And she's resentful at him. She's resentful at him for trying to control her.
Right. But he's also trying to help her and he doesn't want to like... And he doesn't want to enable her.
But I mean, though, those feelings of resentment and all of that, that's the first thing that comes to mind. And that brings him there because he wakes up and tries to go look for her and he finds her. And that's what gets him there. I thought that was actually, that's like, that seems very David Bruckner to me. Like from the Night House, David Bruckner. Like I think that's good world building. I think. Do you get the idea?
I kind of get what you're saying.
Where like her desire for self preservation calls her brother, and is gonna, you know, for lack of a better word, is gonna be a victim.
Well, yeah, well, because she doesn't want him to be a victim, but she doesn't know what the fuck. He's the first individual in her head. It's like when they ask to choose your destroyer in Ghostbusters, and it's like the first thing that pops in his head is Stay Puft the Marshmallow Man. Well, the first thing that popped in her head was this dude, her brother. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what's on her mind. That's where her feelings are. As an addict, like, the thing is accountability, and she has a hard time taking accountability as an active addict. But it does show that, at least a little bit. The person who's not an addict, the one who does want to help, but a lot of that is, they're just like the addict in a sense, but they're not on the drug, they're on the person.
So you're saying you were a fan of her accepting responsibility in the end and ultimately choosing to bear the weight of her decisions.
Well, she had to. Well, yeah.
I mean, she didn't have to.
I like that, but I don't like Pinhead saying it, and I'm glad we got there. I don't like Pinhead saying, to carry that weight. And but like, that's cheesy.
Yeah, because like, they make the Cenobites just seem like all they want to do is torture. Like, they really get off on it. And then for Pinhead to be like, wow, you're so altruistic.
Well, not only that, Sophia pointed out to me, she's like, they're suggesting, though, that the human experience itself
is the worst.
Well, because you're choosing
life.
To them, in their realm of, it's a relative existence, right? They're like, you want these peak experiences. And they're like, you don't want that. You want this prolonged emotional suffering where you're carrying this.
Well, I mean, the lament configuration, lament is fucking lament. Is regret, you right. know? So it's like, you're choosing to live with regret.
So that's so pretty, I mean,
ultimately
cool.
You're choosing your own suffering, but it's like,
but also
it just
like,
seems like such a limp dick thing, you know? It's
I
like,
I just didn't like the choice of words coming out of Pinhead's mouth like
that. Well, I agree that Pinhead should not have said that, you know? Like, I feel like it should have been her or her friend. But, like, think about it. It's like you choose the lament configuration. You choose the lament configuration, and then it's like, okay, you can just go on with the rest of your life. You may have, like, PTSD, but, like, things are just going to continue going.
Well, I mean, but like, we're used to that, though, I mean, relative, but just like they're used to those things.
You pick one of the other ones, and you get these weird body modification, flesh tear. Doesn't matter what you choose.
Those are normalized to them, though, in that realm.
Right. It doesn't matter what you choose. You get that fucked up shit, but then it's like, oh,
we have that stuff too.
I choose
just
life.
Invisible.
I choose not to be like you, and it's like, hey, cool. Then I'm going to leave you completely.
Because they said earlier you can't give back gifts, but she didn't give it back. She said, I don't want it.
Yeah.
So she turns it down, which also, though, I kind of had a problem with because it's like, damn, that's easy.
But then by her
turn, get rid of it.
But yeah. If she's turning down the gift, the Cenobite then said that she's choosing a gift. So ultimately, she isn't turning it down. They're giving it to her anyways.
So she's still got the.
So it takes into account free will. And even though her decisions are what set this course of events into action, and she ruined everything.
Well, and that's
on her.
I think that's the biggest concession you have to make with the movie is that, like, obviously the lament configuration is a monkey's paw sort of deal.
Hella.
Where no matter what you pick, it's going to be like, I wish I was rich. Well, you get like a million pennies. Like, it's that sort of
thing. Yeah, you get money that's fresh from a robbed bank.
So then the idea of choosing human life for the Cenobites is like the worst of the worst. If you pick humanity, that's torture forever and ever.
Yeah,
because they're in a different realm of existence that they've adjusted to, where those are, you know, as alien as their pleasures are to us, like, it, they're like, you want to have emotional fucking torment for years,
for like 60 or so years,
and no real sense of,
and then
like
you go away
and then you just fade out into oblivion. That doesn't sound good to them, because they at least they're getting the intensity of,
I guess, to them,
and they're getting eternal life. That's another thing, because they don't separate it completely. It's not Christian, but it's the idea of eternal life.
Yeah.
Right, because they do mention that in the thing that you're gonna be here for a little bit and then die. They get they're eternal. They live forever. Apparently,
ain't going nowhere. I'll be a while.
What the fuck else do I want? Oh, That's the thing, though, too. That didn't hold together with me. It wasn't all her fault. That's the thing, too.
It was all her fault.
Well, no.
She was in recovery. She was in a toxic relationship. She made the choice while sober to break into this place, continued making the choices to break in.
Okay.
Held on to the thing.
That's her fault. Hold
on. So it set the trail of events. And then afterwards,
that's fucking dumb,
man. She chose to get drunk.
What did the other guy do?
What do you mean?
He lied to her and told
and
took her to the place.
She agreed. Had she said,
okay, but there's other people.
Had she said, I'm not going to go rob this place?
Yeah, but was her intention to do this kind of stuff?
To rob? Yes. She made the choice to go do it.
Robbing is not the same as getting your brother killed and releasing Cenobites.
Obviously, she didn't intend to get your fucking brother killed, but drunk drivers don't intend to crash their cars.
That guy, there's a guy involved who knew exactly what was involved.
You're saying there's a level of accountability, and it's like, yeah, she accepts responsibility at the end.
Okay, stop fucking interrupting me, and let me finish.
You're interrupting me. I was talking first.
You really weren't.
I was.
I'm going to read this text you sent earlier. No, so, look, it's not all her fault. It's her fault she broke in there and used with a guy. That's it. That's her fault.
Yeah, I'm saying her actions set all of this
in the place. I'm not done, fuck ass. Mm. Okay? Mm-hmm. The box is there because that rich fuck put it in there, and then he hired someone to take a fucking weak addict bitch to, and she went.
Right? Well, he didn't hire him to do that, but yeah, sure.
Well, he did. He said we need a new victim, you know, and then that's so it's not like she was involved in all that. It's kind still of
her
shit.
Fault. It's all her fault.
No, she has her side of the street, but that's just her side of the street, man. That's accountability. Accountability. Part of humility is not taking on things that aren't your. That's also a form of false pride. It's all my fault. No, like a great many things. No, it's all her fault. A great many things are your fault, but not this whole fucking situation. You didn't create the lament configuration. You didn't create fucking extra dimensional beings. You didn't create pleasure and pain. That's
her false choices pride. Set this chain of events. And I see why you say that motion. Though,
because you have no recovery. I get why you
have full recovery. You I want took it to responsibility. Be all
your fault.
I took responsibility for the things that I had done, and I was like, I need to make a change.
It's all your fault.
She's just like, this isn't my fault.
But what's like, your fault? It is. What's your fault since you stopped? Anything?
There's tons of things that are my fault.
Like what? What no, today was your fault? Nothing
alcohol related. What was my fault today? I did not work out today. That was my fault.
You stupid.
I poorly planned my time. I slept in late. I did not pack for my trip. The events.
That's all fascist garbage.
The choices that I made led to me not doing something that you did to other
people. You did stuff to other people.
I haven't even interacted with anybody.
Only a narcissist would answer how you just
answered. I haven't even interacted with anybody.
You interacted with me.
You went and fucking riled yourself up. That's what you did.
See? No accountability.
I asked a simple question, and you got all right.
Jorge
up.
Provided you a perfect example of the answer because he understood the same thing.
Jorge
and now
provided,
you have no accountability.
Jorge had a snarky retort
so that basically
provided nothing to the solution.
You're Riley, and we're the Cenobites.
Who's Riley?
She's the addict bitch who forgets everything.
If I was Riley, I wouldn't leave the shower.
What do you mean? Wait a minute.
This fucking guy.
Let me go back to this.
You had a snarky remark. This motherfucker right here.
In my opinion, it doesn't hold together that it's all her fault. Like, it's not all her. That
well, it's it also belies the explanation that, like, anything is anybody's fault. Like,
exactly.
It's fucking, it's interdimensional demons, man. Like, they're going to do whatever the fuck they're going to do.
Like, we didn't start the fire?
You know.
Like, that thing?
Initially, I was a little bit like, well, why is this fucking thing in a box inside of a safe? Hidden away. And I got to thinking about it. I go, well, I guess because as like a millionaire, he can't have those parties anymore at his house where he's like capturing people because he's got a fucking clock in his chest and that wouldn't be a very good look.
Yeah.
And so he's got to, of course, come up with these
elaborate
ways. Fucking like.
What a cook. He comes up and then the thing is, you know, Leviathan.
Well, see, I was under the impression that the woman that got him the box initially, once she saw what he did with it, took it because she said that she hid it. She locked it up because they're like, oh, this thing was shipped in. And she's like, it wasn't shipped in. I locked it up. It was there for a reason. And she's freaking out because she knew that it was just the box. It was the lament configuration, and then somebody fucked with it.
I think
she had remorse for having brought him the box in the first place, knowing that people died.
But it's more machinations of humanity, dude. Of course, like if the box is in a fucking safe in a shipping container, the Cenobites are going to be like, it's fucking right there. It's like, it's not, it's,
well, you,
it's I, real cute. That,
I think maybe homeboy didn't know where it was because it was 6 years, you know? So if she took it and she just hid it, and then the Voight guy didn't know where it was, and that's when he found out, he hired that guy to go get it. That was what I was thinking about the whole thing anyways. Also, when that lady gets killed, like anybody that's seen a fucking horror movie seen that coming. It's like the thing you don't want to get stabbed by is being fought over by two people, and then the one person who is not the main character is going to get stabbed by it.
Yeah, speaking of that, as much like they put considerable thought, I think, into some of these themes and this stuff, when it comes down to just the mechanics of these scenes, though, I agree with you. It's this predictability, and it starts feeling a little too slashery for me. And okay. Well, because you got all these people, and they exist to get picked off one by one.
Yes.
Like, there's the is she Asian or something? There's,
is she cute?
She, yeah, you got her, and it's like, well, she's going to die. And it's like, who is she?
She's the roommate.
That's what I mean. Like, it's, so you've populated your movie with too many characters, and that's the thing. Like, there's too many people that only exist. They only exist to be the next victim, and I get that, but finding your way around that would have been better to me.
Yeah, without it feeling forced.
Yeah, because it feels like a slasher, and honestly, Hellraiser at its best is not just. It's got more going on than just like people getting picked off.
It needs to be more surreal. I mean, it has certain, you know, it's like I've said countless times with Friday the 13th. Like, you know what you're getting. You're expecting bad acting, high body count, lots of nudity, creative kills. With
enchiladas.
Those damn enchiladas.
Micheladas.
With fucking Hellraiser, Chamongos. You're expecting like.
Chamongo Unchained.
You're expecting certain things. And like you had mentioned, the lack of kink in this, and that wasn't even something that I'd really like realized until we're talking about it.
It's a big deal.
So even just the sex scenes, because there was two or three sex scenes in this movie, but they all just felt kind of there.
Yeah, well, there wasn't even any like forbidden sex going on.
Well, and it wasn't even like insanely passionate. Like there was no nudity even shown on screen, which for a Hellraiser movie seems really fucking odd. Like there wasn't even like. You know, Julia in the original, when she skinned, there was still that thing with the feminine figure and just like using that as like a strong visual and something that's going on with the themes. But in this,
where it's arousing and unsettling at the same time.
None of that.
That's what I'm saying. And none that's what that. I meant too, not just Christian stuff by it being transgressive, this kind of annihilation of opposites, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's like, that's fucking gross and kind of hot, you know?
Yeah, like, and the closest
there wasn't any of that.
The closest thing they had was when she hugs her brother and his back is all yucky.
Right, and that felt very Hellraiser-y.
That did, yeah, because that was one of the more visceral things, because like with Hellraiser, you expect to really see like muscle
the
tissue.
The rest of it looks like, pretty sterile.
Yeah.
It's like, these are nice, dried,
little played skins. Safe. It's like, you see people that are chained up, but you don't see the flesh being pulled the way you did in the original, you know?
Yeah.
Little things like that.
Let's talk about like the elephant in the room, dude. Pinhead.
Yeah. I don't know that they needed to keep Pinhead as a character. I think that like
that's fucking a mistake.
Hear me out, like, cuz I think
no.
I think Pinhead the character, each of these Cenobites, when they're made into a Cenobite, has something behind it. Like there's a reason they are disfigured the way they are, and it worked with Pinhead, and that's fine. In this other one, it's like you're trying to hold on to like the recognizability of the character, but I feel like just changing things up and changing everything but keeping the same character seems unnecessary.
I almost feel that what they're trying to establish is that there's like when you're dealing with like Christianity, there's certain types of angels, right? And certain types of demons. Maybe what they're trying to establish is that like to become a hell priest you have to go through this one specific thing
with the needles.
With, you know, I'm just kind of trying to I'm trying to come up with anything. But like maybe it's, you know, to be head motherfucker, you have to have gone through this pin torture.
To me, I kind of feel like how in Silent Hill 2, Pyramid Head was a physical manifestation of James's guilt. And then they just started putting Pyramid Head in everything Silent Hill, even though like that specific character had nothing to do with the narrative. Because it was it's the brand recognizability. That's what it is.
It's the crowning achievement design wise of the, it's the thing that you see that evokes. Yeah. There's the recognizability. It's what evokes the most, it has the most resonance. Yeah.
It has the most visual
resonance.
Is this the first time this is like ignorance talking, but is this the first time that Pinhead has actually pulled a pin?
No, he did it in 3. When he went to the altar, he went like this. He pulled a pin out of his head.
And they've always been that long?
Super long. Oh, okay. It had a worm wrapped around it. He put it through each palm and he went, I am the way.
I like the worm.
That's my favorite part of that movie.
Those kind of details.
See, I was expecting the worm and there was no worm. It's like, you know, that would have been a really good opportunity to do a nice little, very subtle callback.
You know what has stuff like that? What? Lord of Illusions.
Does it? Callbacks to what?
To itself, dude.
To Clive Barker.
I mean, yeah. It's long enough.
He loves them.
He loves them two-hour movies, too.
I'd say, you know, even if you aren't specifically a fan of the Hellraiser franchise, like this is a pretty good entry point in terms of accessibility to the genre or to the series. Yeah. It stands pretty well by itself. I think it's a really good addition to the lore. I think even people that aren't normally horror fans would probably be able to sit through this without too much like, oh, what is this shit you're showing me?
Yeah, it does a pretty good job of explaining itself. And I think Hellraiser as a franchise has shit the bed hard enough that like even a serviceable remake is better than expected, because the last 5 Hellraiser films have been fucking garbage.
That being said, because I think both you guys were coming more from, you were like pleasantly surprised it was okay. I'm actually disappointed it's okay. Like, because
you thought it was gonna be better.
I thought it can be, and it can be better. Like, this isn't something to throw down the, like, let's just stop. Like, no, like this is not, and I'm not talking shit about Halloween or Friday the 13th right now. But this has more potential for lore, for world building.
Yeah.
This has more stuff. Like, and I think it's fucking cool and it can be better. And I think this director can do better. And you'd mentioned the visual element too. I wish I had seen this in a theater with the theatrical showing they had when at Beyond Fest. Couldn't make it up there. But it felt like a movie made for Hulu to me though. And that's like...
sad.
Kind of. Like, and it's not, again, it's not like a huge, like, you know, it's a separate thing, but I want it to feel cinematic. And it felt like a movie made for a streaming service. And, yeah. But
which right now is, I'm, you know, we're coming off the heels of Prey, which
Prey was a fucking banger in a theater though.
Well, but ultimately I think that like
much more cinematic.
They know the medium that they're creating for.
I agree. I think the director of Prey though made a more cinematic film.
Yeah.
Well, cinematography's better, you know.
Which is really weird because The Ritual was made for Netflix, but that movie feels super cinematic. Like that feels like that would be a great film to see in a theater.
I mean, I guess I can see a movie like Hellraiser when you know it's going to be distributed via Hulu, right? If that's the idea that's the first audience it's hitting.
Yeah.
I think it did a really good job not pulling punches where it didn't need to and not overdoing, you know, the subtle touches of the other world, super cool. Like those like opening of the like the of the trap doors into the other dimension. Cool.
They did a little glimpse
of
like
that one in the car.
They did a little glimpse of the maze too, where you know, like from
when
part
the Leviathan's coming
down. I was like, oh look, there's the little maze.
I think that for a small screen adaptation of a movie series that has been woefully fucking overwrought over the last however many fucking years, this is a really good job. And I for the moment, I'm taking a ceasefire on this fuck adaptations of series.
I'm glad.
For the moment.
Now I'll take over. Fuck this movie. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. No, don't fuck this movie. I just, I wanted it to be better, but you know.
All right.
Yeah. The guy has his fucking nerves getting shredded and the parts fall out. And I mean, what do you want? What do I want from this movie? It has that.
I think it's got its heart and its bones in the right place. I think it's done by somebody who is a fan of the franchise, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What are we watching next week, gentlemen?
Halloween Ends.
Halloween Ends.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited knowing that this could potentially be the final time we fucking see Michael Myers. I hope so.
I'm hopeful it's the final time we see Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode.
Yes.
Because H2O was longer ago than the original Halloween was from H2O when H2O came out. It's over.
78. It's been 24 years.
Like, wow. We've seen this for over 20 years now.
Yeah. Well, even Resurrection was 2002, I think. So she died in 2002 and then she came back.
And I know they and then it's so confusing that they say, "Oh, those didn't happen." Like, that's how far down the rabbit hole we
are. Fever dreams. Michael put his mask on somebody else, lol.
Yeah. Anyway,
we'll talk about that.
All right, everybody. It's Super Mimi Times. This is Jorge signing out.
This is Matt.
This is Rick.
Bye, Sophia.
Good night.
And I hate your fucking guts. Good night.
I'm not gonna worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever gonna be alright, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive.